Blog Talk Radio.
Me and my dogs in this bitch like,
whoa.
Jumping off the wall like,
whoa.
Money on the flow like,
whoa.
Fuck with me, you gon' get your ass.
What the hell that be?
Let's stand it up, stand it up, stand it up, girl, stand it. Let's stand it up, stand it up, let's stand it up, nigga, stand it up.
And welcome to the Ed Buzz Show. My name is Ed Molina. My partner in crime as usual, Fuzzy Biscuits. So much to catch up on. I know you've been kind of a little bit MIA. Get it, pun intended. You've been MIA in Miami. Dad jokes. Little few dad jokes to go with my cider.
Lord.
How's Post Malone, son, what is it, Rolling Loud? How's Post Malone? How's Bianca Belair? How is Miami, son? I'm fucking
I can
with
tell you
me.
How
I'm
Miami was. Malone. I don't know about the rest.
But I mean, you feeling that Post Malone shit?
Listen, I wasn't feeling Rolling Loud. So this time I stayed in South Beach, which I don't really mess with South Beach too hard anyway because it's wild. But I got a really good deal on a good hotel. And then, like, right after, like, I booked it, like, a week later, they announced Rolling Loud. And I knew it was going to be bad. I did not know it was going to be this bad. So, like, South Beach alone is, like, I don't even know how to put it. Like, what's the most, like, out-of-control neighborhood in New York for partying?
For partying, pre-pandemic, it could be Williamsburg.
Where there's, like, always fights, people are, like, throwing up in the streets and all that. Like, it's just wild.
Maybe Steinway in Queens. You get a little gully out there at 4 or 5 in the morning when the clubs are letting out in the bars. I may be around in that area in Queens. Some of the old strip joints are on that way, too, where that kid's on.
I mean, like, whatever, like, the biggest party area is in New York City. Like, where people just go nuts, like, you're allowed to do whatever the fuck you want. Like, imagine that, like, times 1,000 and then, like, overdosing on steroids. Like, that's South Beach on a normal day. And then with, like, even though it was way up north in Miami where the Dolphins play, everybody was staying in South Beach. So, like, I was staying on Collins, which Collins is, like, central. Collins and Ocean are, like, the two strips. But Collins is longer, and they close Ocean off a lot. So Collins is, like, central. And I was right there, and, like, man, when Rolling Loud started, because I got there Wednesday, when Rolling Loud started on Friday, I was like, thank God. It was just – it was insanity.
So
I mean, it's
let's
crazy.
Get into it. Let's get into it because so much going on in the last 2 weeks. Started kind of with Ring of Honor in their first live show. WWE's back to live shows. AEW is back to touring. Slammiversary, Impact had their first pay-per-view with a live audience where we saw Jay White and fucking Impact. Like, Jesus Christ, you know what I'm saying? Getting in Kenny Omega's face. And then, obviously, Money in the Bank, Big E and Nikki Ash now. Winning the Money in the Bank, which actually was a pretty entertaining pay-per-view. And then I made this joke, and I'm going to make it here on podcast. You know, when it comes to the Rushmore of death matches, Foley, there's Onita, there's Funk, and there's woo, 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 baby. I'm not even doing that. And there's Zack Ryder, Matt Cardona now. Let's start with there because – you know it, so, like, was that it? Woo, 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 Long Island's finest, even though Mick Foley is Long Island's finest. But I
MJF.
All of a sudden became, yeah, I've all of a sudden, maybe I was wrong about Zack Ryder and Matt Cardona the whole time. Really, really, really quick, Matt Cardona challenged the craziest motherfucker in all professional wrestling, Nick Gage, for the GCW title. And it's like literally Disney popping into like a match against Onita because this is a guy whose reputation is, oh, he's the doll collector with the podcast from the Disney Wrestling Federation, right? That's a fair assessment of the reputation of Matt Cardona. Would you say that's correct?
I mean, I think it's fair, for sure.
I mean, it's fucked up, but it's fair. And then to have, you know, to have him in the ring against the craziest motherfucker in professional wrestling, Nick Gage, and win. Dude, I don't know if you got to see the video. I have not seen a crowd that hot and angry since the Hulk Hogan NWO swerve, which you remember that bash at the beach when he swerved, where people were throwing garbage into the ring. They literally had to escort Matt Cardona out of the building with security. Because, as you know, I'll let you explain what a Nick Gage crowd is like. But they had, for his own personal safety, yo, I know people were mad at the GCW crowd for throwing garbage. I understand why they were mad. We'll get to that in a second. You'll explain why this is a little false outrage to be mad at these people. But you, what do you mean? But you'll explain. But like, yo, this is, forget his WrestleMania moment. This was Matt Cardona's biggest fucking wrestling moment in his career. You can't generate that kind of heat. You just can't. He generated more heat than MJF. He generated more, like I said, it was NWO Hogan Swerve level of heat. I can't even remember a crowd that hot over a result of a match. And again, I'm seeing Matt Cardona with new eyes now. And I'm seeing Nick Gage with different eyes. Look, I'm not the guy to be talking death matches. I'm not Judgy McJudgerson. It's like, oh, my show wrestling like Cornette. I'm not being that. I think there's a niche in space wrestling. You know what I always say about wrestling. Love what you love. Enjoy what you enjoy. You don't have to be a WWE mark. You don't have to be an AEW mark. You don't have to be a deathmatch mark. You know what I'm saying? Enjoy what you like. But part of the reason I stepped out of my comfort zone was because here's a WWE guy who collects dolls and has a podcast about collecting dolls, parachuting into a more intense crowd than the ECW crowd. I'll let you explain that right now. I don't know if you guys can see the heat, but explain to the audience the Nick Gage crowd.
So, like, one of the things, like, offline I was talking about is, like, these matches a lot of times just happen, like, in, like, cornfield-type areas. Like, you know, they'll find places way off the highway, and they'll pull up their little pickup trucks and everything. Because it's kind of like anything goes type of situation, like not just in the ring. So it's okay. To begin with, it's a lot of stuff slides in these events that wouldn't slide in like a WWE AEW event. You know what I mean? And these guys, like literally like Gage is like godlike to them. So they're like die hard, like to the thousandth degree. And
yeah,
it's like to them, like the like Antichrist is like WWE wrestlers.
Absolutely. Disney wrestling.
And then I think you maybe add some of like the Zack Ryder gimmick and like Hypro gimmick, and that probably would further enrage these folks.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I can just imagine when like Gage, who like, you know, I'm not even, you know, like a Gage fan. I like him, but I'm not like a Gage fan. I'm not going to like burn somebody's house down over it or anything like that. But like these guys are just like to see, I mean, they're crazy about it. And to see somebody come from the place that they hate and beat like their god, and they're already like just wild ass, like drunk, crystal meth headed rednecks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I haven't seen the heat, but like I doubt it'll shock me. Like I'll say that. I doubt it'll shock me. It can't be bad enough for me to be shocked, because that's like completely to be expected if this is what occurred.
I was watching it with friend of the show, Bonnie, who she doesn't have the stomach for deathmatch. And I get it. It's an acquired taste. To be honest, I don't think I have. Like, it's a tough watch seeing somebody get cut with a piece of slice. I'm sorry. Call me a punk. It's just the truth. It's not for everyone. And to put
it
in perspective. Go ahead.
No, I'm like.
Go ahead.
I mean, I can watch one, but I can't I wouldn't be like a deathmatch fan. I couldn't be like these guys and just watch it. Every match I watch is a deathmatch and just no. Like I can stomach it like, you know, every 4 or 5 months, which is when you generally will see one. Like that doesn't kill me, but I couldn't be a deathmatch fan and that's all I watched. Like it yeah, that would be like I think you have issues if you enjoy that.
To put it in perspective, think of the passion of the old school ECW. Like, Nick Gage fans think that, and pardon my language, and I'm not trying to be all, you know, misogynist, but speaking the way that Nick Gage fans would speak, they think that ECW fans were pussy and soft. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's their perspective. And ECW has some really, like, I saw my first barbed wire match at ECW, you know. Like, the kings of death matches that I was mentioning, I saw them in ECW. Sabu. Sabu's been in plenty of fucking barbed wire matches in ECW. And so that's the type of audience you're dealing with. And so they're throwing garbage in the ring, and you can tell those beer bottles are not empty. It was that kind of heat. It was literally murder, death, kill, as is their – that's what they call themselves, their gang. They call themselves a gang, the MDK gang. Murder, death, kill. It was literally – had security not been there to escort Matt Cardona out the building, it was murder, death, kill. Like, that's it's that old school heat that Cornette talks about, where they're waiting for you outside or slicing the tires of your car. It was that kind of heat. I'm trying to jog my memory. The last time I saw this kind of intense heat, the only things I could think of are the NWO swerve with Hogan. Or you remember when Elias made fun of the Seattle Sonics in Seattle way after, like, Seattle left for Oklahoma? That was pretty new heat. You know what I mean? Like, that was nuclear heat. And even that, multiply that times 1,000, and that was Matt Cardona. I have a whole new respect for the guy. Like I said, I watched this on the basis of, like, all right, I got to see this shit. Like, this could go wrong so many ways. It was like watching a car wreck, and I actually came away with a bigger respect for Matt Cardona to the point where I'm questioning myself. Did I miss something in WWE? Did Vince miss something in WWE? Because the guy had a way of generating his own, not heat, but like, yo, he got over with fans. How do you feel about Zack Ryder and Hype Rose? They had a following. They were over. And in a lot of ways, you know, he had his WrestleMania moment, but what happens in typical Vince manner, if he doesn't create you, he breaks you. So he gives Cardona his WrestleMania moment, and he loses, what was it, the Intercontinental title? He loses it the very next night at Raw. I think that happened to him, like, twice at 50 pay-per-view. I think he also won the U.S. title, whatever. But
yeah.
I love how Cardona is putting the pedal to the gas in accepting that heat. Look, Matt Cardona has now become the biggest heel in the business. That's amazing to say, based on that heat. Because he's just trolling the shit out of these fucking... I would be scared for my life at a Nick Gage show. I don't think I'm soft. I don't think I'm the toughest guy on the planet either. But I wouldn't take a Paramore to a show. I wouldn't take a kid to a Nick Gage show. You feel me?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely not kids. But I wouldn't go to a show either. And it's like, it's not even about, like, being tough. You, like, nobody's tough enough to fight off, like, 90 meth-addicted drunk rednecks in the middle of nowhere where nobody can help you. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
That's just dumb. You know what I mean? You just don't be that dumb. You can't be tough enough, so just don't be that dumb.
And so now, because this is the hottest, this helps us transition into Fyter Fest, because now Nick Gage drops the title, and this Wednesday he's headlining against Chris Jericho in an AEW show. Yes, that is correct. Nick fucking Gage, the guy whose nickname is fucking, Nick fucking Gage is headlining against Jericho in a no disqualification match at AEW. You know, we talked about this offline. You know, Nick Gage has a very passionate audience, a very passionate fan base. It may be niche, but they're loud, they're vocal, and like you said, it reeks of a sense of danger. And now you're bringing this on a national TV with a company that has a national audience that may not be prepared to see the whole Nick Gage experience. So I'm fascinated to see this yet again, kind of like a car wreck, a lot like Cardona. Okay, we've seen Jericho in hardcore matches. Jericho's been in ECW. He's wrestled in Japan. He's a veteran, probably seen it all, done it all. But you feel me on what I mean? Like, now I'm watching this with an element of danger that Nick Gage, that's his vibe that he brings to his matches. Like, yo, this could go off script. Ask David Arquette how that went for him, going off, like, fucking with Nick Gage. And so now I'm watching this, and I think it's a brilliant idea by Tony Khan. I don't know what you think about it. But having Nick Gage now headline with Chris Jericho, you know, and the no disqualification match, you're not calling it a death match, you're not calling it a hardcore match, you're saying no rules. Like, he's going to bring his bedazzled pizza cut. Like, we can agree on this, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what I'm wondering, though. I don't know what I know. I'll tell you what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if, like, this among his core fans, I'm wondering if Nick Gage will take a hit for this.
Oh, wow.
I don't know
okay.
if they'll be excited that he's going to get his chance. I think they're like, they'll look, I think, you know, I don't know, but I would think some of them, even though there's a lot of diehards that'll stick with him, like, there might be a handful that looks at him as a sellout.
Okay, but I don't see it as selling out. It's that old, it's
I
that
don't either.
Hardcore punk term.
We're talking
I don't
about
see it as selling out.
Rednecks. We are not
Methodistic
rednecks.
Out. Yeah, we're not. And again, I don't see it as selling out as I see it as buying in. Look, Nick Gage is cashing in on the biggest opportunity of his life. You can't be mad at him for that. Like, you can't. Unless
no.
you're, I guess, a redneck.
No. But allow me to reiterate. We are not meth-addicted rednecks. You are trying to apply logic to meth-addicted rednecks.
Oh, my God. Yo, Nick Gage fans are going to hate us if they actually listen to this show. At least not in Finland.
There's
still got
none
our,
in
still
Scandinavia.
From...
There's none in Scandinavia. We're good.
We're good in the Faroe Islands? You think we're good in the heart
yeah, man.
This, of the Faroe Islands?
Listen, we know our core audience, and we'd never sell them out. Scandinavia, we love you.
I love you, Sweden. From
yes.
ABBA to the Swedish Bikini Team to In Flames. But,
to everything.
And it yes.
Zlatan. I mean,
yes,
Scandinavia has a plethora of contributions.
To the world.
Yes.
I'm with it.
God
I'm
bless
with
Scandinavia.
Yes. And our five or six
yes.
listeners out there in Oslo.
You know, we need to make sure that, like, represent Scandinavia.
Yeah, we really do. We need
yeah.
Ed and Fuzz Scandinavian merch with, like, a Viking or something.
Right. We could get Viking.
Match,
we could get Viking hats or whatever they're called. Helmets.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh my God! What's that dude's name from WWE? The Berserker. He used to go ha, ha, ha. You remember the Berserker?
Do that again.
I don't know. He just used to make these grunting sounds. Like,
oh,
you know
man.
What I'm talking about, though.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I love that guy.
Oh,
he tried to stab the Undertaker with a sword, and I was popping so hard for that. I was popping for murder. Maybe I'm not any different than a Nick Gage fan.
Hey, you know, I think it's less violent with a sword. Scandinavians are peaceful people. They wouldn't do any wild stuff.
Another match that I'm looking forward to, Fight at Fest. I'm sorry, it's Fight for the Fallen. I apologize. Fight for the Fallen. Santana and Ortiz versus FTR, man. I'm waiting for that Santana and Ortiz push. I'm a huge fan of Proud and Powerful. I realize part of that is regionalism. As a New Yorker, you know, one dude's from the Bronx, one dude's from Brooklyn. and as a Latino, like, obviously, you know, I do feel a sense of, you know, proud and powerful being my raza, you know what I mean? Like, and I feel that vibe, even when they were LAX. So I'm invested, emotionally invested in seeing a push on this team. And they're extremely talented. And besides, anybody that uses adobo as a weapon, yo, I'm down for you. I don't care what nationality you are. So, but it's a very fascinating match to me because FTR is one of the best tag teams, and they've also kind of been, they got this kind of pseudo push, and now they're kind of part of the Pinnacle. Like, they're kind of in a weird stasis, but I think this match is going to be, it could potentially steal the show Wednesday night, FTR versus Proud and Power.
I also am a Santana and Ortiz fan, not as much as you. But, I mean, you know, I am an ally of the Puerto Rican people. I enjoy using the term WEPA whenever possible. So, I mean, yeah, things like with them, like, using adobo. I don't know. They play it up.
Oh.
And you know that I like people who are, they go beyond the mat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And how can you, I mean, Proud and Powerful have been, they've been there from the beginning with AEW, and they've been solid, and they've been playing the background. So
yeah,
let them have a little bit of shine. You know, they've been good soldiers.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to see them at least get back into that title push for sure. And like you said, I talk about leaning into your bit. You remember the Thanksgiving thing that they did when there was a Jericho Thanksgiving or whatever? And they brought Chris Jericho, like, you know, Mama Ortiz or one of, or Mama Santana gave a package of, like, Vicks and, like, adobo and, like, yo, that shit had me on the floor. They gave Chris Jericho chancletas. Yo, I bought Proud and Powerful chancletas. That is a real story. They're so meaningful to me, I don't even use them. I have them as decoration. Dead ass real story. True story, as they say. Yo, that's how much of a fan I am. But, yeah, that's one of the matches I'm looking forward to. I'm curious what you think of this match, though, because it's supposed to set up All Out, all right? It's a 10-man elimination Survivor Series-style tag team bout between Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and the Good Brothers against Hangman Page, Evil Uno, Stu Grayson, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds. If the Dark Order wins, both Hangman Page and Stu Grayson and Evil Uno, they respectively get a heavyweight title shot and tag team shot. And I think if they lose all rights to ever challenging for the title so long as Kenny Omega. This is obviously to set up the main event at All Out. I'm curious what you think of this, how it could play out. I feel there's only one way it could play out. It's just a matter of the entertainment value. But I'm curious what you think of the prospect of Hangman Page versus Kenny Omega in this era of both of their careers where, you know, Kenny's running the bootleg club, and I'll get to that in a second. I'm still going to call him the bootleg club. That's what the elite is to me, the bootleg club. You know, against their former friend, Hangman Page. I'm curious what you think of that storyline because this is obviously setting up All Out.
I mean, I would love to see Omega versus Page. I'd love to see it. And I think that this match could be better than expected, too.
I think
the Dark Order is slept on, for one. And if they are setting up Page versus Omega, that could make for an interesting ending. No, I think it will exceed expectations. And I really hope it sets up Page versus Omega. I would love to see that.
The other match that we'll talk about, and then we'll move on and talk a little about Money in the Bank and WWE. Oh, and by the way, the reason I call him the Bootleg Club is because Jay White fucking, at the end of Slammiversary, Jay White fucking shows up and confronts this Bootleg Club claiming to be Bullet Club. You know me. I go back to the Bullet Club. I can't say Finn Balor. I can't say Day One. But I got into the Bullet Club because of AJ Styles. You know what I'm saying? I love the whole concept. I understand it's a ripoff of NWO, but I don't give a fuck. I love the concept. And so Kenny left. Yo, the Good Brothers left. The Bucks left. You ain't Bullet Club no more. You're the Bootleg Club. You're the Wannabe Club. You're the Z Club. Remember that shit in WWE? The Club. You know what I'm saying? It sucks that I'm saying that about, you know, the Good Brothers who I like, you know, and the Bucks. But, yo, you're the Bootleg Club. Jay White is coming back to take care of fucking business. And that was an amazing end to Slammiversary after Kenny Omega, another death match. Sami Callihan, I feel like Kenny Omega brought out the best of Sami Callihan. Even though death matches is Callahan's wheelhouse, I thought that Callihan looked like a million bucks even in defeat. I've never been the biggest Sami Callihan fan, but I was very, very entertained. And then to have Jay White, the lights go out and have Jay White come out with the Never Open title and confront Kenny Omega, and then have David Finley come out and try and attack Jay White, which, by the way, typical Impact. I'm sorry. The more it's like three steps forward and five steps back. We missed all of this in the pay-per-view because production cut out when Kenny Omega threw up the Too Sweet sign to Jay White. And as that was happening and the running was happening, they cut out and faded to black. And it was like, yo, what the fuck just happened? There's a lot going on with the Bootleg Club, but speaking of Bootleg Club, this is the segue to this, sorry, that's my babbling. The other match that I'm intrigued in is Lance Archer, the new U.S. IWGP champion. He defeated John Moxley last week in a Texas death match. Jesus, it's like death matches are in vogue again, I guess. But yeah, Lance Archer defeated Moxley after he put Moxley through a table full of barbed wire. Yeah, so he's now the new U.S. champion, and he's defending against Bullet Club member Piccolo, who is brothers you might know very well as G.O.D. it's Haku's kid, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm curious what you think of that match. I'm curious what you think of taking the belt off of Moxley and putting it on Archer. And then are we seeing semblances of the civil war that's been brewing between Kenny Omega and Jay White?
So you're talking about Archer versus
Piccolo, yes.
Okay. I don't know anything about the other dude at all.
About
other
Piccolo
than what
or just...
you told me, that it's you know, the G.O.D.'s brother.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, I like that Archer got the belt off of Moxley. You'll have to lead on this one. I hadn't heard of this dude until tonight. You know I haven't seen New Japan in a long time.
That's true. Well, Piccolo, before the pandemic, he was actually in the dojo. He was one of the young lions, the young boys, as they call him. He's come up through the system. During the pandemic, he's actually been at the LA Dojo working in New Japan's strong brand, the American brand. And so he's improving leaps and bounds. He's a tall motherfucker. He's a big boy. He might be taller than Archer. Lance Archer's a hoss. And so I think, you know, I still think that Piccolo is green. I feel like Lance Archer, this is going to be about jobbing and making Lance Archer stronger. But now with Lance Archer having the title, I'm curious what happens now with the New Japan pay-per-view coming up, Resurgence in Los Angeles. If Moxley was being pushed as one of the potential headliners, Moxley don't have the title no more. And I know he has some sort of contract with New Japan, but now the focus is on Lance Archer. So I'm a little curious how and why this move was pulled, taking the belt off of Mox before the Los Angeles show, unless you're just going to give Moxley a rematch at Resurgence, then that booking makes sense to me. But again, with all this Forbidden Door stuff going on, who's booking what? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's how I would book it. You know, I'm not a what-if guy, but that's how I would book that. Maybe you have the rematch. You have Piccolo do the job. Maybe we get a glimpse of G.O.D. coming to AEW. Maybe not. We don't know. I'm desperate to have Dangerous Peppers and G.O.D. in the U.S. because the New Japan Tag Team Division has been, I don't want to say ass, but it's been limited. You know, like three tag teams. You can't run a tag team with this stuff. And so I'm dying to see G.O.D. and Dangerous Tuckers here in the U.S. But, yeah, I think this is more about setting up Lance Archer for potentially a rematch against Mock in Los Angeles at the Resurgence Show. So, who knows? It's a lot of interesting stuff going on with Bullet Club right now. And a friend of mine, shout out to Maurice, like he was clowning me because he was like, oh, my God, you're still Bullet Club. That's still 2017. I'm like, yeah, I'm still Bullet Club. For life, baby. DC for life. Excuse me. I love Kenta. I love El Phantasmo. I'm a big fan of the Tokyo Pimp. I think Jay White is the most underrated wrestler on the planet right now, and I'm glad that he's in the U.S. for crowds to finally get a glimpse of how good Jay White is. So I don't know if you want to opine anything on Jay White before we move on, or a potential Kenny Omega Jay White competition, Bootleg Club versus Bullet Club, before we move on to WWE. So I'm off.
No, I'm a Switchblade guy for sure.
So in the Civil War, would you say you're going with Bullet Club and not Bootleg Club?
Yeah.
Switchblade.
I mean, I like both, but I would have to side with Bullet Club.
By the way,
even
not
keeping up with New Japan lately, I'd still have to side with Bullet Club.
Jay White showing WWE and AEW how good he is on the mic. Because he does, you know, you don't, in New Japan, we discussed this, you don't really have to be, say a whole lot of words and get over in New Japan if you don't know the language. But he's really, really, like, I think he's better than Kenny Omega. I mean, I know people are critical of Kenny Omega's style of doing promos, but I think he's better than Kenny. I'm not just saying that because, you know, some bullet books. I generally think Jay White is really, really underrated, and I think New Japan got lucky re-signing him and having him go to AEW or WWE. So, we'll see what happens. But let's talk Money in the Bank. I'll let you lead on that. What did you think of the show, and what did you think of the cashing? I know you know a little bit about it. Again, you were in Miami hanging out with Post Malone and Rick Ross. Are you out there, whatever y'all do out there in South Beach, I don't know. But, what were your thoughts on Money in the Bank and the cashing? We've already had one cashing.
I mean, I thought Money in the Bank was solid. I thought it was pretty good. We talked about it, before we segue to the next one, but I like Nikki Cross. Nikki Ash, I'm like, I'm just not as into it. I wasn't mad that she won. It was, I thought the ending was kind of weak for the women's. I'm not going to lie. Like, they're all sitting there.
I like that ending.
They're all at the top, and they're all fighting. And then she just, like, walks over them and grabs it while they all fight. I'm like, But alas, it was still a good match, and I didn't like the end, though. Not even that Nikki Ash won, but I didn't like how she won. I thought it was cheesy.
Okay.
That's it. For the men, I was psyched. Like I said last weekend, I thought it would happen. I wanted it to happen. Like, I hate they had to not break up the New Day, but separate them in order to do it. But I feel like they did have to do it. And regardless, I'm happy that Big E is getting, like, a run, because I think Big E, it's long overdue. And I think he had steam earlier in his career, and the WWE ruined it. I know it's hard to believe that the WWE ruined somebody's rise.
A push?
But, yeah, it happened. So I was happy about that, and I thought that was a good match. Was it the best Money in the Bank match I've seen? No, but I thought it was a good match. I thought it was definitely a good match. Flair won the title back, right?
Yeah, she won the title back against. That was Money in the Bank. She won the title back by submission against Rhea Ripley.
Another good match. Yeah, another good match. You got to remind me. What else happened at Money in the Bank?
Bobby Lashley squashed Kofi Kingston, which as mad as Kofi Kingston fans are, I thought was the right booking. I thought it was the right move. Brock Lesnar squashed Kofi Kingston. I'm okay. And we talked about this last podcast. I thought that was the right booking, is having Bobby Lashley squash Kofi Kingston to keep him strong. Like,
you have to have your champion strong.
Which they fucked that up with Karrion Kross. But if we have time, I'm going to bitch and moan about that. But, they're fucking NXT royally. Like, Vince must hate NXT. I don't get it. Or he hates Triple H. I don't know what it is. Anyway, I'm not going to get started on that now. Let's go back to Money in the Bank. So I thought that squash match was good. I think the low-key, I don't want to say match of the night. I thought Rhea Ripley and Charlotte were match of the night. And by the way, I have to walk back that what I said last podcast about, I don't want to see Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte. No. You know how I always say, the Usos versus
a good match,
you're
going to
get
no
matter.
Match.
Yes, yeah. It's Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair is becoming her steamboat. You know how, like, Ric Flair toured the entire country doing 60-minute matches against Ric the Steamboat? That's what Charlotte versus Rhea Ripley kind of feels like. It reminds me of that. It, like, there was no such thing as a bad Flair-Steamboat match. And so I got to walk that back from last time. Like, there really isn't a bad, because even their match on Raw when Nikki cashed in was a pretty fucking good match. You know, but what I thought was the low-key, understated match of the night, yo, the Mysterios against the Usos, and I like seeing the Usos as champs again. That was a really fun match in the pre-show. It was really fun. And the Mysterios as a tag team has grown on me, man.
I thought it was... I thought it was a good match. I don't know. Like, I felt like the Mysterios weren't going to last as champs.
Which is a shame.
Because I feel like they wanted to make sure to give Rey, like, tag team titles with his son. But I don't think that was ever long-term plans. I think that was, like, a favor to Rey.
Right.
Which I'm not mad at all.
I can see that.
And I'm not mad at that. Like, he can have that. So, I mean, the match was kind of, and especially with Roman Reigns' push, like, I thought it was kind of just a no-brainer. Like, I just expected the Usos to win. I thought it was a pretty good match.
So, yeah, and then, you know, and then the other match was Roman Reigns versus Edge went as we expected. And then also Bobby Lashley, we talked about the AJ Styles and Omos versus the Viking Raiders. I guess they're setting up the seeds of dissent between Omos and AJ Styles. By the way, look, Omos is not one of these tall bums like Giant Gonzalez. I'm trying to think of another tall bum that stunk. The Yeti. Like, he's not – he actually kind of moves pretty well in the ring. I like how they limit his moves where – everything, when he tags in, it feels like a Colossus is stepping into the ring. I like how they're working that. I think a lot of that is also credit to the commentary team building that up. And because his actions have to be very limited. He's not going to give you 60 minutes like Flair and Steamboat. It's just not. But I think they've been using him wisely where it doesn't look bad. This isn't, you know, Giant Gonzalez?
Yeah.
Here's
the thing. I agree with you. I think that he definitely has gotten better, and I think they kind of brought him along slowly because we've seen him plenty of times before we actually see him wrestle. So I think he'll continue to get better, but do you think he's ready to stand by himself and not be with AJ Styles? And I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Like, you kind of still have to keep him kind of in tag team. At least I think so. But fuck, who the hell knows what Vince is thinking? How do you bury Karrion Kross? And pretty much bury the entire NXT locker room. So this upsets me because I love the NXT brand. Probably my favorite brand of all the three brands. But it's like, you can't – they had – the NXT champion debuts on Monday Night Raw, and then they have him job to Jeff Hardy. And I love Jeff Hardy, no disrespect. But if you're building up Karrion Kross as a future potential champion for your Raw or SmackDown brand, why are you burying him against a guy who's been on the kind of on a losing streak, on the downside of a streak, I guess, for lack of a better word? I don't want to say downside of his career because Jeff Hardy still has something left in the tank. But, like, Karrion Kross is supposed to be a future star. Yo, and he looks like a legit killer. How do you have him job to Jeff Hardy? And in turn, by having the NXT champion job in 4 minutes to a guy on a losing streak, you're fucking over Gargano. You're fucking over Adam Cole. Oh, and then they had, I understand squashing Kofi Kingston. It makes sense. I don't get squashing Kevin Lee. I don't get Vince's thinking right now, especially in this era where so much, yes. Okay, what did I say, Kevin Lee? Oh, my bad. My
you
bad.
Kevin.
Yeah, Keith Lee. Yeah, I did. Kevin Lee is the MMA fighter. My bad. Keith Lee. You get where I'm going with this, and we only got like 3 minutes left, but I don't get the thinking. Does he hate Vince? Especially, look, we just mentioned Jay White from New Japan, the never open champion, debuting on Impact. We just talked about Nick Gage going to AEW. We're talking about potential Jay White potentially following to AEW, Kenny Omega. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff going on in all these different universes and forbidden doors and whatnot, and Vince wants to bury his own cool brand that he has. I don't get the thinking. I don't. I don't see what you gain from burying Karrion Kross in his debut on Raw instead of making him look like a killer. Yo, when I saw it was Jeff Hardy who was going to fight, I'm like, yo, this is perfect. That's the right veteran job to put over Karrion Kross. And I was even thinking, it's like, yo, they did that with Kevin Owens. Remember when Kevin Owens debuted against John Cena? John Cena had the U.S. title. He was doing the U.S. title challenge. And Kevin Owens came out with the NXT belt. And he won. He won. Kevin Owens won in his debut against John Cena. I don't get the thinking of burying Keith Lee and Karrion Kross. Two guys that are, it's obvious they're over with fans. Like, I don't get the thinking. I don't know. What do you two say? We'll close out on this. I don't know. What do you two say from?
I mean, how long ago was it that Keith Lee looked like he was, like, on a meteoric rise to the top and Vince loved him? It seems like less than a year ago.
Yes.
Yeah, it seems like less than a year ago. And now, like, I mean, you know, you got to make your champ look strong, but you're going to, like, Keith Lee's going to get, like, you know, embarrassed. I don't know, man. It doesn't make sense to me at all. And, like, Karrion Kross makes even less sense. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm just at a loss for words. I have no clue, like, how that works. He was, like, one of the most over NXT champs in a while. And he's, like,
who's doing a great,
you know,
program with Samoa Joe
kind of,
right now, too.
Yeah, and he's kind of the guy, he's kind of the mold that Vince likes. You know, so I mean, yeah. I don't know. A lot of WWE stuff just doesn't make sense lately.
Raw just drags down the rest of the show. Well, SmackDown's been doing cool shit. NXT's been doing cool shit. We're going to get Walter versus Dragunov, like, on NXT instead of NXT UK. And it just seems like Raw just keeps dragging everything down. And I just don't get that thinking. Vince got to get his shit together because there's a lot of cool shit going on in wrestling, which... That'll segue out. We'll do this again next week because, like I said, there's so much going on. There's so much. It's a fun time to be a wrestling fan. I'm excited. We'll discuss Nick Gage versus Jericho next week. All right, man. We'll do this again. Peace.
Late.